The Devil's Advocates, radio for the 99%.
You gonna sit here? It's good.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates radio show. We've been joined by a Schema John Nichols here on the Jade Monkey deck. John, from the Nation, from the Cap Times, friend of the Devil. John, thanks a lot for coming around, man.
It's an honor to be with you. You got a great location out here.
I said you look far too dapper for a Devil's Advocates
party. And I said you look like every Wisconsinite ever.
Little chubby, pale white legs, wearing shorts.
Wearing shorts maybe a little early, you know, but that's okay.
Man. Hey, when in Rome.
That's right. Well, Rome, Wisconsin is especially special.
John, don't want to linger on what happened in Buffalo, but the president did address the topic today. What's your thoughts, John? The immediate reaction by pretty much every Republican, at least those running for governor here in the state of Wisconsin, John, was to say, what, more cops and perhaps more guns?
Yeah, they're advertising them for sure. Look, I'll start out by saying I'm glad Joe Biden's my president.
Yeah.
You know, he went up to Buffalo today, and he was a total class act.
Yeah.
He gave a great speech, actually a very, very fine address, where he talked about white supremacy in blunt terms. He talked about disinformation and lies in blunt terms. And you know, one of the core realities of him, he's a very human person. He broke up and started to cry a little bit when he was talking about the father who had gone to get a birthday cake for his daughter. And, you know, at the end of the day, that's what you want in a president. You want somebody who will call out the wrongs, and there's clearly wrongs here. There are politicians and media folks who have peddled, you know, horrific lies and disinformation, but also just a politicized take on our circumstance that is evil and cruel. And he called that out, but he also showed a lot of humanity. So I give him credit for that. As for the bigger issue, look, it's huge. I know there's a lot of people saying right now, oh, wow, something horrible happened. This is, you know, how did this come to be? Well, the fact of the matter is we had a mass shooting in El Paso not long ago that was racially motivated. We had the shooting at this church in Charlotte that was brutally racially motivated. And, in fact, you know, I mean, imagine that, praying with people and then shooting them. We've got a long, long list of this. This is a pandemic. It's an epidemic. It's whatever term you want to use.
And historically, it's been around for a long, long time, John.
Well, we had lynching and the Knight Riders, too. I mean, let's be honest. This country has a long, dark history of brutal, racist violence against black people.
We don't want any CRT here. Come on now, John.
Is this just...
I love CRT, by the way. I'm like a very big fan.
Is this just a different way to, I mean, hanging was a tactic, not just to murder someone, but also to warn a community.
Terrorize.
Scare people.
Sure, sure.
John, do you see AR-15s? Is this the newest tactic? The greater weapon of mass destruction?
You're asking me to get into the head of somebody who's crazy. I shouldn't say crazy.
Yeah,
you're asking me to get into the head of somebody who is so wrapped up in their racist lies. I agree, not crazy, but in fact, somebody who's so wrapped up in the racism and to try and explain, you know, where they're coming from. And I don't know the answer to that. But what I do know the answer to is this, that we have a toxic mix in this country right now. And that toxic mix allows racism and xenophobia to be amplified both through, you know, cable television, on radio, and through social media in profound ways. And then we mix that with incredible availability of stunningly deadly weapons. It's a terrible combination. And however it plays out, whether the person is trying to scare people or just simply trying to kill people or whatever they're doing, it has the impact. It has the impact of spreading a violence to a level that, you know, look, if you came to the United States, you know, having not knowing any of our history in recent decades, you would say that, you know, we're a country in crisis. Our divisions have gone to a level of violence that, you know, any other country in the world, just about any other country in the world, would find unacceptable.
John, would Tucker Carlson's irresponsible speech, the great replacement theory, the great white replacement theory, do you think that would be permitted speech? I mean, I know we've got a constitution and First Amendment free speech. And he's not specifically advocating for violence, but the theories he's advocating for inspire violence in the white supremacist.
Yeah.
John, is there a blanket right to First Amendment freedom if you don't specifically say go shoot up the supermarket?
And the courts have answered that. And they've said, yeah, there basically is. That's the reality of the circumstance that we are in. If you yell fire in a crowded theater, then you've crossed the line.
Direct cause and effect.
Exactly. And that's where the courts have put us. Now, countries around the world are wrestling with it. It's not just us right now. France just had a presidential election where they literally had a prominent presidential contender, Zemmour, who was, talking about great replacement theory, throughout the campaign and got, he didn't win, but he got a substantial vote. There's no question. And, the fact of the matter is that this, it exists in our politics. It exists in our discourse. What's interesting to me, and this is where we get into, because you're asking the kind of this deeper question: what do we do? How do you deal with this? And what's striking is this manifesto that this 18-year-old, I think he was 18, right, that this guy wrote, because in it he went into great detail about how, well, I didn't get this from my parents, and I didn't get this from my community. I got this from the internet, right? He was basically saying, I got these ideas by trolling around online, and that becomes an interesting issue for us to wrestle with as a society, because you know that young people are kind of marinating themselves in their phones, right? And frankly, a lot of adults. In fact, I look around here, there's probably even a few adults that are looking at their phone, right? And there's one right there.
Listing on their phone.
Try to hear it, I understand. John. But you understand. So people are, people will sit on those phones for 3 or 4 hours, right? More longer, just kind of, it's how they, quote unquote, relax at the end of the day. So we have to actually start to have a very serious rethink of our media platforms and how they operate. I don't think you censor debate. Honest debate and people really disagreeing, even people disagreeing on things that, what I find, like offensive, right? I understand that. You allow for that debate. But where you get to the point where it is just a pure stream of misinformation, a pure stream of lies, and frankly, a pure stream of vile images and ideas that promote hatred, well, that's something that I think our owners of Facebook and Twitter and other platforms have to deal with, and we as a society do. And if I could sit here and give you the answer for that, right, I wouldn't be sitting here with you.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. John Nichols from The Nation and locally here in Wisconsin, the Cap Times. I always appreciate you coming around, John.
I have it literally physically come around.
It's
party time. It's summertime.
It's like, are we in Monona or Madison?
We're at the Jade Monkey.
I know, we're on the line here.
I believe the mailing address is Madison.
Are we in Monona or Madison here?
Madison. We're going to go with Madison.
All right.
We're going
with
Madison. John, the political extremism.
Yes.
Religious extremism. Racial extremism.
Media extremism.
It's all extremism.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It is. I'm not clear that the motivation is really anything more than a byline. It's the extremist behavior to force, their will or their vision of the world upon the rest of us. Isn't that really, really what all this is about?
It's fascism.
Yes. I mean, at the end of the day.
Yeah, it is the fascist mentality, which has become really, really generalized in our time. And that's an interesting thing because, at the end of World War II, which is in the lifetime, maybe not many people here, but, certainly their parents, right? And people are still alive. At the end of World War II, if you called somebody a fascist, if you said, look, you're kind of taking us toward fascism, that would be fighting words, right? That would be an insult, a profound insult. Now we have people who might still not like being called a fascist, right? But it's so generalized into where we're at. And we have what the average person, not some intellectual, not some radio host or something like that, the average person in America would have understood as fascist mentalities, just writ large across our politics. The idea that you can overturn an election because you didn't like the result. Well, that's fascism, right? That you can do a coup, a violent coup, to prevent the counting of the electoral votes. That's a fascistic approach. And the promoting of racial hatred, of xenophobic, violent hatred, that's fascistic. There's just no doubt about it, right? And so we've entered into a place where I fear a lot of this is getting generalized and normalized. And we ought to really, you know, as a society, we ought to pause. I think you and I can talk about it all we want, right? But what we desperately need are people, and let's point a finger where it actually belongs, at somebody like a Robin Voss or somebody like a Ron Johnson or any of the gubernatorial candidates. You know, Republicans have a responsibility to call a lot of this stuff out, right? And to say, this isn't a part of our party. This isn't who we are. And I don't hear enough of that.
Well, John, we have friends whose parents are, you know, still alive that remember came in from Germany, and speaking with Annalise, that she's just cannot believe that we're in this again. But let me ask you this from a historical perspective. Obviously, fascism is a human condition, has always been with us. It probably will always be here. We fought World War II over this, essentially,
yeah,
right?
You're always going to have a totalitarian, right? You know, people that think the way to solve any problem is to be, yeah, and this could be on the left and the right, right?
Yeah, no
but
doubt.
Who think that the way to do it is just put me in charge and let me tell everybody else what to do.
Vote for me, I'll set you free, John.
Yeah,
but,
exactly.
I mean, what can we do short of, you know, war to rein this in? I mean, obviously, as mentioned, you know, we called someone a fascist back after World War II. That was an insult, and we've kind of eroded that. Can you think of any particular steps that were taken back then, short of the war, that would help, you know,
sure,
blunt some of this?
Yeah, of course. I mean, look, the fact of the matter is that Roosevelt and Henry Wallace and people thought about this all the time. And what they said was the way to do it is to make sure that you've got a fair economy that addresses racial and economic and social injustice. They were very blunt about it. Now, can that solve all of racism? No, it won't. But can it address a lot of the fundamentals so you really, you know, kind of put a break so that people are not vulnerable to a racist or xenophobic appeal because they feel like something's really wrong and they don't know what it is, but they're going to listen to whoever yells the loudest or screams the worst thing. Economic and social and racial justice is the way to deal with a lot of this. And I know that you know, look, I think a lot of our Republican friends actually understand that. I think they understand that quite well, but they're terrified, literally terrified, of Donald Trump and of political funders and some parts of their base. And they don't have the courage to stand up and say the right thing. And that's why I talk about Voss, Robin, or, you know, Ron Johnson, people like that. You know, Ron Johnson will in what he thinks is an off-the-record interview, he'll acknowledge the election was fairly decided. But boy, when you get him up in front of the Republican convention, I think it's this weekend.
Yeah, Friday. I think
he's going to get up there and say, you know, Joe Biden is my president. You know, he won that election, and I got to say, I'm pretty impressed by what he went up and said up there in Buffalo. I may disagree with him on some fundamental issues, but, you know, he is the president of the United States.
That would be so refreshing, but so not going to happen.
Well, I might even get Ron Johnson reelected if he
right.
said something like that. But that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's what he should do.
John, should we sneak up to that convention and see if it turns into utter chaos on Friday?
Well, I do think that invited, you got at least one candidate there who's sort of running on the chaos platform.
Ram
and I'm
jam.
Sure he's like really there.
Yeah.
And getting more support, you know, like all the time. So I think the convention, this Republican convention, will be worthy of viewing, you know. And I will mention that they tried to take over the Wisconsin Republican Party in 1962 with the John Birch Society. So it won't be the first time we had an interesting convention.
I'm going to try to sneak in with Joel Clayfish, see if they'll let me broadcast from
I think if
the
you
lobby.
Wear a camo tuxedo.
Yeah. I just think a red badger hat. I mean, so many
no,
MAGA
it's a
people.
It's a camo tuxedo, brother.
Camo tuxedo. Well, less. Maybe Joel's got one that would fit me, or maybe Rebecca does. Come back with our fine guest, John Nichols, here on the deck at the Jade Monkey Cocktail Lounge, the funkiest of all Hawks Finer neighborhood bars. Party, well, live broadcast till 6. Party could be all night long. Come on out. It's just getting started.
the Devil's Advocates. Story. Never personal, only about politics.
I come home one Friday, had to tell the landlady I done lost my job. She said, that don't confront me, long as I get my money next Friday.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show live from the Jade Monkey in Madison, Wisconsin. We've got our pal John Nichols from The Nation magazine hanging out with us for one more segment. We appreciate it, John, as always.
John's got all kinds of friends here at the Jade Monkey,
all
man. People love you in this town, John.
They sure do. It's a small space. You have to be polite.
That's right.
Yeah,
I got to ask you, and we got Joe Parisi joining us soon
the
here
county
on the deck.
Executive?
Dane County Executive Joe Parisi is in the hizzy.
That is huge.
It is.
I backed him for governor a couple times.
He
just didn't run.
Well, perhaps he will.
You've got people literally collecting autographs here. It's very good.
It makes us feel like big shots, John. You must do that all the time.
Not nearly enough. I'm always glad to. And I always say, people will come up and they'll say, do you mind if I, could you autograph my book? And I'm like, if you find an author that doesn't want to autograph your book, that person should not be in the business.
Yes, sir.
Right? No, you're supposed to,
If I could ever finish a book, John, write a book, I'm 9 pages into my novel, The Great Crudy novel.
Oh, it's amazing. Can I just tell you that somebody forgot to tell Joe Parisi to get a shave? I mean, he's looking very
I thought he was looking good. I got to be
fabulous.
It's no Mo May, apparently.
No, he looks good, though.
Sort of hipster Joe Parisi.
He does. Joe Parisi looks a little gubernatorial right now.
Oh, he does. I see what you're doing there,
all
John.
Right, there so let's talk about a couple of the big races. Before we lose you to the party in the crowd.
Oh, yeah.
John, the senatorial race.
Yes.
When's that going to heat up? I heard him bemoaning the
fact. Oh, it's kind of heating up a little bit.
Describe how it's heating
up. Tom Nelson keeps trying to heat it up, right?
But nobody's taking the bait so far,
John. No, they don't, because that's the nature of politics these days. Everybody's a bore. Right,
they're not being boring on the Republican side. They're taking
shots. No, they know how to do
it.
But the Democrats are—they all got these advisors. They pay them $1 million to tell you don't say anything interesting.
Right.
I'm not kidding. No, it's literally be as dull as you possibly can be, and that's worked so well for them, right? So, the fact of the matter is that in the Senate race, it's not heated up at a very high level. It took a little bit of an upturn. As a debate, when the abortion stuff came down, you saw Sarah Godlewski really kind of jump ahead on that,
right?
And I think get some space. I bet if you polled right now, she'd be up a bit from where she was. Alex Lazary just posted an ad today on the issue, but look, I think that this race will remain tepid until if they do. I'm not sure they will until they have a debate. You got to put these people on a stage, and then you got to ask them not the simple questions. Are you for health care for people? No. Ask them, how are you going to beat Ron Johnson?
Right.
And make them talk about it, and make them talk about how their opponents might not be able to do it.
John, Mandela Barnes doing the barnstorming.
I love that.
Yeah.
Actually,
going up north. And I love the fact that there's a specific outreach plan to go and hit up some of the rural areas. But how important do you think that really is? I mean, even numerically.
I think it's hugely important.
Asked Tammy Baldwin, right?
Yeah. Well, in 2008, Barack Obama got 45% of the rural vote in Wisconsin. In 2012, he got about 43% in that range. In 2016, Hillary Clinton got 32%. That collapse was why she lost the state, right? That's the bottom line reality. Now, when Biden won in 2020, he brought it back up to about 35, 36, 37%, depending on some areas. That was enough to just bring him across the line. So the fact of the matter is, Democrats that don't campaign hard in rural areas lose. It's as simple as that. That's a fundamental reality. Doesn't mean you don't mobilize aggressively in the cities. It doesn't mean you don't fight for the suburbs. But boy, neglecting rural areas is a pure strategy for defeat. And that's something that John Fetterman actually out in Pennsylvania is trying to teach people.
Now, John Fetterman is an intriguing candidate. In Pennsylvania, their primary is today.
He dresses like you.
He does, kind of like a bum.
No.
And he's for legalized marijuana, so I got his back on that topic.
He is very for that.
John, is Is it the charisma of the candidate? I mean, you look at Barack Obama, he won like 58 of 72 counties.
Yeah.
And Biden won like 14 counties.
Yeah, but he won. Look, a lot changed from Obama to Biden. We went through a real transition societally, politically, and we have to recognize that. But you're right. What was the genius of the Obama campaign was that he still reached out to people in this in a way that said, you know, look, I expect I can get a vote just about anywhere in Wisconsin. And Democrats have lost a little bit of that energy. I understand the dynamics. It's harder, and the politics has gotten a lot uglier. But the fact of the matter is that is how you make Wisconsin work. It's always been how you make Wisconsin work. And if you can run your numbers in Milwaukee, Madison, Racine, Kenosha, Beloit, a couple of Janesville, and Eau Claire, La Crosse, Green Bay, and then you combine it with a strong vote, strong enough vote out of rural areas. It doesn't have to be 50%, but it has to be in the at least low to mid 40s. Democrat never loses. Never loses in that race. But if that starts to fall apart, you see defeat after defeat after defeat.
Okay, so we got half a fighting chance in a statewide race.
Yep.
Because, you know, we are sort of a coin flip blue-red rural
50,
urban
50.
State.
Yeah, yeah.
But the legislative outlook for the Democrats is terrible, John.
It's completely gerrymandered. It is the most rigid gerrymander, and that's true in the congressional races, at least most of them as well. And you just have to accept that. That is the painful reality of our politics. And so you want to fight to kind of claw that back. The problem with a gerrymander is this. Gerrymanders loosen over time. Initially, they're really bad, right? And so this cycle is likely to be a very rough cycle. Democrats have to fight hard simply to maintain enough seats so that they don't lose the ability to uphold a veto by Tony Evers. Tony Evers is going to get reelected. You know, he's going to win.
Are you convinced, John?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And what sort of odds are you giving today, sir?
Well, I'm not a betting man. I'll tell you why Tony Evers is going to win. He's actually done a pretty good job with a pretty hard hand dealt with
him.
Number two, he is an incredibly humane, very decent Wisconsinite. He comes across as that, and no matter what they throw at him, it just doesn't work. And number three, I think the abortion issue and some of these other things, you know, start to level out the huge challenges that Democrats have in this cycle. But I would say I expect Tony Evers will win. I think there's a decent chance Josh Call wins as well. But you better look at that legislature to make sure you got enough people to uphold a veto.
Yeah, if you can't hold a third of the legislative seats, and right now that's a uphill climb for the Democrats.
I think it can be done. And I think Democrats may even increase a little bit if they're lucky. But you've got to accept political realities. And so those statewide races become the really critical ones.
So you've got two competitive congressional races.
Potentially. Yeah, one
for
sure. Maybe
three
a
in the whole state competitive legislative races.
It's madness. And I give great credit to the grassroots Democrats that go out in those tough districts and try and win. And sometimes some of those do win. So I'm not writing it off, but I am telling you, that political reality makes this a tough year. So you're going to look at those top-of-the-ballot races especially. And then you're going to wait for the day when Joe Parisi comes along and leads the Democratic Party out of the wilderness.
To the promised land, or at least to the Jade Monkey Cocktail Lounge. Thank you, John Nichols. County Executive Joe Parisi is next. Come party with the Devils.